All right. Hi, everyone. And welcome to Tao Te Ching. We're going to be looking at verse 22. But before we do that, I'm going to play a song. This is a song that's been a favorite of mine for a few years. It's by Avril Lavigne, and it's simply called Innocence.
Waking up, I see that everything is okay. The first time in my life and now it's so great. Slowing down, I look around and I'm so amazed. I think about the little things that make life great. I wouldn't change a thing about it. This is the best feeling. This innocence is brilliant. I hope that it will stay. This moment is perfect. Please don't go away. I need you now. And I'll hold you it. Don't you let it pass you by. So safe, not a single tear. The first time in my life and now it's so clear. Feel calm, I belong, I'm so happy here. It's so strong and now I let myself be sincere. I wouldn't change.
So as I mentioned, we're ready for verse 22 in the Tao Te Ching, and I'm starting with the Derek Lynn version, and it says, yield and remain whole, bend and remain straight, be low and become filled. Be worn out and become renewed. Have little and receive. Have much and be confused. Therefore, the sages hold to the one as an example for the world. without flaunting themselves, and so are seen clearly. Without presuming themselves, and so are distinguished. Without praising themselves, and so have merit. Without boasting about themselves, and so are lasting. Because they do not contend, the world cannot contend with them. What the ancients called the one who yields and remains whole, were they speaking empty words? Sincerity becoming whole and returning to oneself. Well, just kind of an overview, what I hear in this is egolessness, right? You know, we could also call it humility, but it's not the ego being humility, it's egolessness. But what I would like to do is go ahead and look at a couple other translations before we get into it more specifically. So I'm going to Wayne Dyer. The flexible are preserved unbroken. The bent become straight. The empty are filled. The exhausted become renewed. The poor are enriched. The rich are confounded. Therefore, the sage embraces the one. Because he doesn't display himself, people can see his light. Because he has nothing to prove, people can trust his words. Because he doesn't know who he is, people recognize themselves in him. Because he has no goal in mind, everything he does succeeds. The old saying that the flexible are preserved unbroken is surely right. If you have truly attained wholeness, everything will flock to you. I really like that translation. But let's go ahead and look at Stephen Mitchell. And of course, he's always a little different, but similar. If you want to become whole, let yourself be partial. If you want to become straight, let yourself be crooked. If you want to become full, let yourself be empty. If you want to be reborn, let yourself die. If you want to be given everything, give everything up. The master, by residing in the Tao, sets an example for all beings. Because he doesn't display himself, people can see his light. Because he has nothing to prove, people can trust his words. Because he doesn't know who he is, people recognize themselves in him. Because he has no goal in mind, everything he does succeeds. When the ancient masters said, if you want to be given everything, give up everything, they weren't using empty phrases. Only in being lived by the Tao can you be truly yourself. So I think all three of these translations are pretty similar, but what I'm going to do, for some reason, I felt attracted to Wayne Dyer's, so I'm going to go to Wayne Dyer's. We'll kind of focus on that, and then if there's time, we'll go back and look at the others and see if there was anything different that we want to, look at. So he says, the flexible are preserved unbroken. I think the way that I would say that in modern terminology is don't be set in your ways. If you're set in your ways, it's going to create some kind of flack or conflict for you in your life. And I suppose the next question that's arising in my mind is who or what would be set in their ways, right? One thing that's really important to me is intuition. I always feel like spiritual teachings can be misunderstood if people do not know intuition. That any teaching could be used rightly, but also any teaching could be used wrongly. For example, the flexible are preserved unbroken. if somebody took that as a law, they might be flexible in situations where they shouldn't be. To me, the only rule that applies is feeling intuition. I would say being flexible is a general guideline. Because being flexible as a generality is certainly more egoless than being set in your ways. Like if you had to compare the two, you know, if I had the two of them on a test and I said, pick the best answer, which one is egoless, set in your ways or flexible, you know, you'd pick flexible. But there may be times when it's not in the best interest for you to always be bending to other people's will. It seems like it was probably Michael Langford once where I had a communication with him. And he talked about not bending to the will of other people's ego. So just as there could be perceived to be a rule to be always flexible, you know, sometimes you might listen to a teaching like do not bend to the will of other people's ego, and then you might think there's a rule to always stick to your guns, and if it's the other person's ego, right? And I just don't think either rule works. And in fact, I have to say there's one place where we should never be flexible. And that is that we should always listen to our intuition. We should never ignore our intuition in favor of someone else's will or even our own mind's ideas. But I would still say, with all of that said, that if you are listening to intuition, you're probably going to find that the vast majority of the time, the guidance is going to be that you be flexible. And the reason for that is, the majority of the time, when you want things your way, you're stuck in ego. And so guidance is helping you let go of your ego by having you surrender to the other person's will. Right? But again, the only rule I can really give, well, let me give you a crazy example. You know, A Course in Miracles says something similar like this. I don't remember the exact words. It's been many years since I've read it. But the idea is, you know, if your brother asks, these might even be the words, if your brother asks for something outrageous, give it to him. You know, and of course, that's something outrageous in your opinion. You know, like, that's a ridiculous request. Well, some of you may have heard that for a few years I had a stalker. And I remember one particular, and of course my guidance with the stalker, which I didn't listen to immediately, was not to communicate with him at all. Which maybe people wouldn't define as flexible, right? there was one person that I used to talk to on the phone back then. And she quoted that line from the Course, if your brother asks you to do something outrageous, you know, do it. And told me I should have sex with him. Because that's what he wanted. Yeah, I can see. So this is what I mean by any teaching can be misused. The actual guidance was not to communicate with him at all. And that's what was not only in my best interest, but his best interest. Because even when I tried to politely turn him down, just even that communication back at him seemed to feed this sickness, right? It was like giving attention to it, and it got worse. So what I learned was that the guidance, although a lot of people would say, you know, ignoring someone is not loving, they really don't know. Because the guidance to ignore him and to not respond to his communications was both in my best interest and his best interest. Because his illness wasn't fed in that way. So again, the flexible or preserved unbroken is a really nice, you know, general guideline, and being aware of that, you may feel that guidance a lot to be flexible and to surrender to someone else's will. You know, you're moving in with someone and they want to hang a picture here and you want to hang the picture there. You think it looks much better there. It looks stupid over here. You know, so what? Let them hang the picture over there. You know? Right? Because really, I mean, what in you wants the picture over here, right? It's your ego. So a lot of the time surrendering and being flexible and surrendering to the other person is really great. But I just don't want to sell this as an always. The only always is checking with your own guidance in a very genuine way. So the flexible are preserved unbroken. The bent becomes straight. Now, when it talks about the bent, what I see in my mind are like reeds bent over, you know, kind of in the wind, right? Like bent. And again, they're bent over because they're being flexible. And when it says the bent becomes straight, that really means to me that through being flexible, therefore, through not clinging to your own personal will, your will fades and dies. And to become straight means then to become clear in the Tao, to become enlightened, to become egoless. The empty or filled, another way of saying the same thing, right? We all know about NTI 1 Corinthians and its teachings regarding the empty shell. So by letting go of my own will, by letting go of my own ideas, by letting go of my own opinions, I become the empty shell, and then I am filled with light, filled with self-realization. The exhausted become renewed. In my experience, if you're really practicing the teachings, it gets tiring. You know, it does. I remember, you know, when I first started watching my mind, I mean, there were so many wrong-minded thoughts in a day. You know, like even if I, just when I was trying to let go of hate alone, just one type of thought. At that point in my life, there were so many hate thoughts a day. And the practice I had been given was to look at each hate thought, recognize it as a hate thought, realize I don't want hate, and then let it go, which sounds simple, makes sense, unless you got to do it 500 times a day. Then it gets awful tiring, right? And so, you know, and so if you're really doing the work, if you're really committing yourself to the work, you can get exhausted. If you're only doing it a couple times a day, you're not getting exhausted, but you're probably also not letting go of hate or whatever it is you're trying to let go of. So when this says the exhausted become renewed, again, what it means is you're letting go of all that old conditioning, and that's a lot of work. But through letting go of all of that old conditioning, you become renewed. Hold on, let me tell my family I'm teaching. Just like the other night, we were in a trustee meeting. They were texting the heck out of me. They're doing it now, and now they're starting to complain because I'm not responding. Oh, wait, no, she's not. She's actually not talking to me. She's calling Ron Mom because he's saying things that I guess I usually say. So we can continue to ignore it. he told her not to forget her hiking boots this weekend, and usually I'm the one that reminds her to bring her hiking boots. So she's like, okay, Mom, to him. The flexible are preserved unbroken. The bent becomes straight. The empty are filled. The exhausted become renewed. The poor are enriched. You know, that sentence is very much like Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, where he said that the poor in spirit will inherit the kingdom of God. People are always like, huh? You know, seems like you should have to be rich in spirit. I think in this particular sentence, the poor again means, I mean, it could be possibly, you don't have a lot of stuff because you're not interested in stuff. But I think another good word for poor here would be simpleton, right? You're not someone that thinks you know a lot. You're not someone that's carrying around a bunch of opinions, a bunch of stuff that where you're smarter than other people, right? In the Bible, when Jesus says that the poor in spirit shall inherit the kingdom of God, the way that was interpreted, of course, the difference here is this says the poor are enriched. And in the Bible, Jesus says poor in spirit, which is a little bit different language. And the way NTI interpreted that was that everyone, even those who are not at all on a spiritual path at this time, will awaken. That everyone, even those that are as far from a spiritual path as you can get, are still a part of the one consciousness and ultimately are the absolute. So the way that was interpreted, poor in spirit shall inherit the kingdom of God, was that it's not like this is just for a chosen few or for a few who live up to certain expectations, right? It applies to everyone, those rich in spirit and those poor in spirit. But here it doesn't say rich in spirit or poor in spirit. It just says poor and rich. So the poor are enriched. Those who just aren't carrying a lot with them in their beingness, in their identification. You know, like if every time I had a conversation with someone, I somehow needed to bring into it my education. I somehow needed to bring into it my accomplishments. You know, I somehow needed to bring into it whatever I thought would make me good in their eyes. That's not being poor. That's being, in my own opinion, rich. I am all of this, right? The poor are enriched because it's kind of also reminds me of A Course in Miracles, where it talks about grandeur and grandiosity. Right? Grandeur is of spirit and grandiosity is of ego. So the poor are enriched with grandeur. The rich, the grandiose, they're just confused. They're confounded, right? They're confused about what has value. They're confused about who they are. The poor are enriched. The rich are confounded. Therefore, now therefore means that the sage is aware of all of this, everything we just discussed, right? The sage is aware of all of this. So therefore, the sage embraces the one. I just want to see if everybody else used the words the one. No, I didn't think so. Stephen Mitchell used the word the Tao. And there's a reason why I'm looking this up. And then Derek Lynn did say the one. The reason I'm looking this up is because, words get used in a million different ways. But one often points to consciousness, and Tao points beyond consciousness. And I can't say for sure when they say, therefore, the sage embraces the one, if they mean the unity consciousness or if they mean the absolute. It feels to me that in the language of the Tao, the one would point to the absolute, not to unity consciousness. Because unity consciousness, believe it or not, is not yet fully empty. And the Tao is always talking about fully empty. So I would, just my intuition says that when it says, therefore the sage embraces the one, it really means the sage embraces the Tao. The sage remains empty. The sage remains poor. Right. Therefore, the sage embraces the one. Because he doesn't display himself, people can see his light. And I'll be honest, I have always been suspicious of people who need to make a grand display of themselves. You know, whenever I see a spiritual teacher claiming to be enlightened, but they have to dress in the robes and have all the people following them around, or they have to be posing with their books all the time, or anything like that, which seems to be saying, you know, hey, look at me, I'm a spiritual teacher, I'm enlightened. Anything that appears to be like a neon sign around their head, it's not comfortable to me. It doesn't feel genuine. It feels like genuine enlightenment is a very quiet thing and therefore leads to a very quiet beingness. It doesn't mean that a genuine enlightened person doesn't show up in a helpful way and therefore sometimes announce their enlightenment to some degree, so that people will know that they do have the credibility to speak on what they're speaking about, right? But there's a difference between helping people see that you have genuine credibility and being very flashy in displaying yourself. So because he doesn't display himself, people can see his light. Because he has nothing to prove, people can trust his words. Now, if you've listened to me very carefully and not missed a word I said, then you've probably heard me say more than once that the reason that I trust the sages, especially Ramana Maharshi and Bernadette Roberts, is that they don't appear to have anything to gain from what they're sharing with us. There's no reason for them to lie, right? And that's exactly what this says. This says because he has nothing to prove, people can trust his words. And that, I think that is true for me. You know, Peace Pilgrim I trusted. She had nothing to gain. Now, I did come across a teacher early in my spiritual path who I found myself not trusting. And the reason I didn't trust him is he spoke a lot about money. He wanted his followers to give 100% of their funds to him. And when they didn't, he told them they were holding on to a plan B so that they could run back to ego. He talked a lot about gaining properties and gaining followers and gaining money. And hearing all of that talk, it seemed to me like he was trying to gain. And I found I couldn't trust him. Even though sometimes his words sounded right, the teaching sounded right sometimes, I was close enough to him and I heard enough of this desire to gain that I couldn't feel confident that he was coming from purely the right mind. So again, because he doesn't display himself, people can see his light. Because he has nothing to prove, people can trust his words. Because he doesn't know who he is, people recognize themselves in him. And I think this kind of has two meanings simultaneously. You know, if I think I know who I am, and if I'm, you know, tell you I'm this and this and this, a lot of that stuff is going to be different from who you are. But if I am just the quiet presence listening to you, those differences aren't being thrown out there. And so there'll be a natural relation with me that just comes from not highlighting differences, right? From being more of the listener, from speaking to what you're saying rather than talking about myself. I always think it's funny in conversations, and this is true for most human conversations, where one person tells a story and then another person tells a similar story. Oh, this happened to me. And then another person, oh, this happened to me, you know, and everybody's talking about themselves. But if there's someone there that's just listening and maybe even asking you more questions about your story, they feel very relatable to you. But in addition to that, if the person is not, if the person does not see themselves as a person, what shines through them is the true self, and you will recognize your true self in them. That's the higher meaning of this. When I first started receiving inner Ramana, I don't remember if it was the first message, second message, third message, but somewhere early in the receiving of him. First of all, I had never seen a picture of Ramana Maharshi. I didn't really know anything about Ramana Maharshi. I had no idea what he looked like, nothing. So I only had this inner receiving to go by. But I cried. And the reason I cried was because I recognized my true self. It's like I had always, always, always known it, but I denied it because I was afraid to admit that's who I was, because I thought no one else would believe it. And I'm not saying I'm the man Ramana Maharshi. I mean, he died in 1950. I was born in 1960. I'm not trying to say I'm the reincarnation or anything stupid like that. I'm saying that that true self is who I am, and I recognized it. You know, that true self. And so that's what this is saying too, that if if a person is egoless and they're the true self, you will recognize your true self in them. And it probably helped with Ramana that I didn't have a physical appearance or anything. I really just had the true self. I didn't have anything in the beginning. You know, but I remember the first time I saw his body, somebody sent me a video. You know, I'd probably been listening to him for, 6 weeks or 8 weeks or something. And somebody sent me a video of him because I knew I was listening to him. And I just cried. Even seeing his body, I just cried. There was that same feeling again of not that I'm the reincarnation of him, but I could still see the true self. And I just cried. I could see myself in him. So even the body didn't get in the way of that. Because he doesn't display himself, people can see his light. Because he has nothing to prove, people can trust his words. Because he doesn't know who he is, people recognize themselves in him. Because he has no goal in mind, everything he does succeeds. That's funny. That's almost like a joke too. If you don't have a goal, how can you fail? But beyond that, if there's no attachment, things tend to go better. If you have an attachment, if you're trying to make things go a certain way, if you're trying to force the universe, you're going to run into a lot of trouble along the way, here or there. But if you have no attachment, there's an easier flow that seems to come in and support you. And, we could argue that literally, in the eyes of others who are judging, it will appear that you have more success. Because you're just following that intuition. You're just doing what you're called to do, and you have no attachment. If we just look at, Regina, well, since I left my job, let's look at what's been done. And none of this came from me, right? None of this came from me. Listen to it with that realization. NTI came. Those of you who are familiar with the 60 messages that came when I was with Laurent, that came. Inner Ramana came. The foundation for the Holy Spirit was founded. And then eventually Awakening Together was founded. And then a retreat house was founded. Look how much was accomplished without a goal, without a personal goal, without me. You know, so many people, also I noticed this a lot, you know, so many people, even spiritual teachers, will make their own goals. You know, I want to do this, and then I want to do this, and then I want to do this, and then I want to do this. Everything that I just listed to you came about without me ever setting the goal. It's like I was given the assignment from the unknown. You know, just like, you know, I used to have a real job with a boss, and my boss would give me an assignment to complete a project, and I would go and complete that project. It had that same feel. I had the same feel that I was given an assignment, and then I had to stay really tuned into intuition. And as I did, the assignment unfolded itself. In fact, even now, I think I'm in the middle of another one of those, although I can't tell you exactly what it's going to look like, but I'm starting to see some puzzle pieces, some very funny puzzle pieces coming into place. At the fall retreat in 2016, I was given the guidance, and I talked to you guys about this a couple weeks ago. I was given the guidance, the words were to prepare for the end of the movie. And that's when I started Gentle Healing, started really training Jacqueline in my job. And I feel that I will probably be out of here. My guess is May of next year, but that is a guess. But it doesn't feel like it's a wrong guess. But I wasn't told anything else. And, you know, sometimes people want to know what I'm going to do. And I can't genuinely say that. I have some possible guesses, but they're guesses and I genuinely don't know. But some interesting things have happened since the fall of 2016 when I received that guidance. One thing that's happened, we already were raising money for a retreat house, but at that point, we weren't considering La Vida. In fact, it probably was the fall of 2016, just a couple weeks later, when I came down here to La Vida hiking with Jacqueline and John Mark Stroud. And John Mark Stroud said, wow, you should have your retreat house here. I mean, that was the birth of it, you know. So it was probably just a couple weeks after I received the guidance to prepare for the end of the movie. But so that came about, and we started looking in this area. And of course, since then, a retreat house has come about in La Vida. And if you haven't heard yet, just a few days ago, my mother bought a house here. And this wasn't true a week ago. A week ago, she was not talking about moving here. Now she is. Now my mother is talking about moving here permanently. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know how all of this is adding up, but something's adding up, right? Something's adding up. And I've already heard my mother tell a couple people on the phone that I was going to take care of her. So, but I don't have a goal. I genuinely don't have a goal. You won't hear me talking about what I'm going to do and blah, 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 because I don't know. I see these interesting little pieces coming together, and I'm wondering if they're adding up to something, and I'm watching with curiosity as the puzzle puts itself together, but I cannot tell you next summer what my life is going to look like. I don't know. So no goal is genuinely the way to live your life. And I will tell you that if I hadn't received that guidance to prepare for the end of the movie, I wouldn't even be thinking about leaving. But I was given that guidance, and I can feel it nearing. You can feel it nearing. You can see things starting to change. Something's in motion, right? It's not a completely clear picture yet, but some of the pieces are starting to come into focus. So it'll be fun to see how all this goes. So, because he has no goal in mind, everything he does succeeds. That's because the universe is able to move him. And of course, the universe is going to succeed. Right? But if you have goals in mind, you're trying to manipulate the universe, make it go your way. That's not always going to work out. The old saying that the flexible are preserved unbroken is surely right. Now, he says the old saying, if I remember correctly, the other two said, when the ancient master said, if you want to be given everything, give everything up. What the ancients called the one who yields and the one who remains whole. It's kind of funny. They each are saying something different here. So let's look at all three of these. Derek Lynn is referring to the one who yields and remains whole. Stephen Mitchell is referring to, if you want to be given everything, give everything up. And Wayne Dyer says, the flexible are preserved unbroken. I'm just going to sum all of that up to there's really three words that are coming to mind. Complete egolessness, absence of desire, and complete egolessness, I'm going to have to say no self-will. It would be more clear. No self-will, no desire, and a willingness to always follow intuition. I think that we can say that, you know, very simply, that that's what all three of these are pointing to. No self-will, no desire, and a willingness to always follow intuition. Nothing in you that would get in the way of that. And then it says, if you have truly attained wholeness, everything will flock to you. It's unfortunate, those words sometimes, because I have known people on the spiritual path that I swear to you, that's why they want to be enlightened. You know, I remember this one lady I used to know, who was very sure that, you know, if she became enlightened, that people would be like wanting to kiss her feet as she walked by. You know, and this was what, what she desired. I can tell by the expression on Shauna's face, it's not what she desires. I did have somebody drop and kiss my feet once. It has happened. In India, I was walking down the street and this guy came up to me and you know, said something. I don't remember what he said, and then dropped and started kissing my feet. So it can happen, Shauna. I don't even remember what the deal was. I remember it was weird. It felt weird because, you know, I'm an American and we're not used to that kind of thing. But everything will come flocking to you. I think, well, I'll tell you, when I started this spiritual path, and it's funny, I can never describe to people how ignorant I was. Even if I try to describe to you how ignorant I was about spirituality, you still won't believe me. You can't, because you know so much. You have to imagine that I knew something too, but I didn't. I was armed with Peace Pilgrim. And I had read her book. I was armed with Peace Pilgrim, inspired by Peace Pilgrim, and that's it. So pretty ignorant. But this calling awakened in me, and this is before I started the course. I started the course after this, within weeks of this, but after this. This calling awoke in me, and I didn't really have words for it, but when I was forced to use words, I used the words, I want to become enlightened. That's just because I had to use words. The truth is, those words don't accurately describe. There was just this calling, and I had to follow it, right? But I knew. Actually, I think this is right after I started the course. I think, okay, if I get the timing right, when I started the course on the Disney cruise, and on the Disney cruise, what happened was I was saying a prayer before I started the course, and that's when this came down over me. Something came down over me, and I heard myself say, I will learn whatever you want me to learn. I will do whatever you want me to do. Just make me useful for the rest of my life. And I knew in that moment, although I had no idea what was coming, the feeling was like I had just turned on a dime. The feeling was everything is different now, although I had no ideas what that meant. But I knew it without a doubt in my mind that everything was different now. I knew that there were going to be changes. I had no idea I was going to be leaving my job. I had no idea of anything, writing NTI, nothing. But I could feel that everything was changing. And I felt like it would be scary to my family if I didn't talk to them about it in advance. And so I had conversations with my mom and my stepdad. I mean, my mom, my dad, my stepmom, my brother, and his wife, and Ron. These were the six adults that I felt like needed to know. And again, this is when I came up with the words, I've decided to become enlightened in this lifetime. But those were just words. You know, I had to put some words to this discussion. I didn't even know what the heck enlightened meant, to be honest. But I remember telling my mom did get a little scared when I told her. And I remember telling her, Mom, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know as long as I need something, whatever I need will be provided. You know, if I need a house, I'll have a house. You know, I remember saying that specifically. If I don't need a house, then I might not have a house, but I won't need it. You know, I remember this. And I think that's really the gist of this statement. If you have truly attained wholeness, everything will flock to you. It doesn't mean that people are going to drop on the street and kiss your feet, but it just means that everything that you genuinely need will always be provided, and you don't have to give that another thought. And somehow, I think it's amazing when I look back on it now, somehow I knew that from the very beginning. And don't get me wrong, later I forgot and went through a lot of fear about finances. But in the very beginning, I knew that I had no idea it was coming, but I, inside myself, I knew there was nothing to fear. And so it's good that I told my family, again, the six adults that really mattered in my family, because that was in April of 2004. By next April 1 of 2005, I sold my house. And in June, I quit my job and moved to North Carolina and wasn't working. And at least this didn't totally freak my family out, because I gave them a heads up that things were going to change. And here's why I've decided to become enlightened in this lifetime, right? In fact, just since we have a little extra time, and I think we're at the end of this, I can tell you a couple other really interesting stories. Yeah, we're at the end, so let me tell you a couple related stories. I was in China with my dad and my stepmom and my daughter when Jasmine was 10. And I remember we were sitting in an airport waiting to fly from one part of China to another part of China, and Dad and I were just talking. My dad is a very conservative guy. You know, I mean, the way you survive in this world is you get a good job, you stick with it. He worked for the same company from the time he was 19 to the time he retired. You know, you get the picture of the kind of guy he is. So we're sitting in this airport in China, and this is after I've left my job, after I'm living in North Carolina, after I'm writing NTI. At that time, I wasn't, you know, now I get a salary, but at that time I wasn't getting any salary whatsoever. I wasn't earning any money, no incoming donations, nothing. And as you can imagine, this kind of worried my dad a little bit. And so while we're in China, he decides to bring it up, and he tells me that what scares him the most is that I'm not even putting money into Social Security. You know, what's going to happen when I'm old? You know, I'll have no income. He can see it. But he even said, I can see you're okay right now, you know. But what about, you know, the future? You're not putting anything into Social Security. And I looked at my dad and I said, Dad, you and I have a lot in common. But there's one important difference between us. You're living as if the world is real. I'm living as if it's not. Now, that's a heck of a statement to make to my dad. And my dad looked at me and said, Regina, all I know is this world is full of fools, and you aren't one of them. Isn't that amazing? Like, there's no way his brain could even process what I just said. And yet, he felt to trust me. And there was a similar experience with my mom. My mom is a Southern Baptist. You know, she believes Jesus died for our sins. If you come in here, you'll find a cross in our house that's made out of, like, you know, kind of barbed wire kind of thing to symbolize the thorns, you know, and she thinks that's beautiful. So she actually came to one of my gatherings once. It was down in Louisiana, not far from her house, and she came. And at that particular gathering, I told stories. Like, I talked about the time that I was an apple, you know, and I talked about the time that I was in Shanghai, and I felt the love coming at me from the towel rack and the love coming at me from the floor. And I knew that everything was alive, even inanimate objects. And, you know, she listened to all these stories, and all these ladies are Southern ladies. So even though they're on the spiritual path now, they understand the Southern Baptist mindset. You know, the people in the South know what that thinking is. And they all knew my mom was there listening to all this. And one of the ladies finally turned to my mom right in the middle of the gathering and said, "What do you think of all this?" And my mom said, "All I know is that I trust Regina." So the reason I'm telling these stories is because, to me, what this really points to is when I first received this calling and I went to my family in complete ignorance with no goals, having no idea what was going to happen, but just knowing things had changed and that I should discuss, let my family know that things were going to change. The certainty or the sincerity in me communicated itself. Right? It communicated itself. So when this talks about everything comes flocking, what also came flocking with that was even my parents trusting me with decisions and stories that they can't even begin to understand. You know, Ron, you know, my partner, he's not onto the spiritual path at all. I mean, he pretty much kind of ignores that it's there, but he doesn't ignore it in a interfering way, right? He'll just be upstairs watching Star Wars while I'm downstairs teaching, you know, Bernadette Roberts. You know, he's jogging on the treadmill while I'm meditating, you know? I mean, he has nothing to do with it, but it's not an interference in any way. And somehow I always knew from the very beginning that I always knew from the very beginning, and this isn't true for everyone, but I knew it was for me. This was a knowing. I knew I would not lose my family. That was in the movie I was sent to see. At the very end, and this may be happening, at the very end of the movie, the character that represented me left the ballroom dance studio, which represented the spiritual path, and went back to his family and lived out the rest of his life with his family. And I knew when I was watching that movie, again, I had no idea it was coming. This was very early on the spiritual path. That was the day I received the guidance to write with Holy Spirit and teach it. I had no idea what was coming, and I knew I had no idea what was coming. But I knew that my family would always be right there with me. Why? I can't answer that. Because I know it's not true for everyone. I know a lot of people have to leave their families. But if my family had dispersed and not remained a part of my experience, that would be because that was okay. Just like with Peace Pilgrim, it was okay to be homeless. You know, you kind of have to trust your path. You kind of have to trust that everything is being given. Everything is flocking to you. Now, of course, there's no such thing as physically everything being given, because then I'd have to own every house in the world, every company in the world. I'd have to have all the money. Like, oh my God, that'd be awful, wouldn't it? So there's really no such thing as everything being given. That would just be a pain in the rear end. But everything that's right for you is given. Everything. Not some things. So you have to trust however it's working out for you, that's the way it's supposed to be. And if you look at somebody else, you know, like Eckhart Tolle got a lot of money out of the deal. I didn't get a lot of money out of the deal. If I was to look at Eckhart Tolle and say, but I want the lot of money that he got, that would be my wrong mind. Apparently, I don't need a lot of money. Right? If somebody who had to give up their family looked at me and said, but she got to keep her family, that would be their wrong mind. Because apparently, for some reason, it's beneficial for me to be with my family, a reason I could never explain. And for them, it was beneficial for this apparent parting to happen. You have to trust this line that everything will flock to you without conditions, without goals, without attachments. And then you'll see it's true. So that's all I have to say. And now I'm actually going out to lunch with my mom. And then I'm heading back to Pueblo after lunch. So it's been nice seeing you guys. And I'll see you again I'll see you again tonight. Wednesday nights I do teaching. So if you show up for that, I'll see you tonight. All right. Bye.